Today, what makes a digital cat sell for thousands of pounds? The upside-down world of NFTs. This is a story about an online craze that is making some people a lot of money. For Guardian writer Shirin Kali, she began investigating it by speaking to a man who was at the centre of a viral moment in 2016, the death of a gorilla called Harambe.
Jeff McCurry was an amateur photographer at Cincinnati Zoo.
Yes, I was a volunteer photographer there. They had contacted me and asked.
And he was a regular visitor to Harambe's enclosure, so the gorilla enclosure at the zoo.
Oh, yeah, I considered him my friend. Of all the animals in the zoo that while I was working there, he was the one that I felt attached to for sure.
And, you know, Jeff really felt like he built up a relationship with Harambe, who was a 17-year-old Western Lowland gorilla. He frequently photographed him. And tragically, he was actually there on the day, which was the 28th of May, 2016.
Mommy's right here!
A day of panic and desperation at the Cincinnati Zoo.
That a three-year-old boy climbed into Harambe's enclosure.
Authorities say the child climbed over the three-foot barrier, made his way through wires and bushes, and then plunged the 15 feet into the moat, the gorilla cornering the boy and then picking him up.
The gorilla has the child and is dragging him around the pen,
causing the zookeepers at the zoo to shoot Harambe dead.
They say their only option?
Oh my God!
A rifle.
Now, it was a very tragic incident.
I've been in this business roughly 50 years, 47 of them here. And I've worked with this gorilla family. I didn't think it was going to be this rough so early. Okay, I've worked with this gorilla family since they came into the United States, the grandparents.
And it probably wouldn't have gone anywhere beyond the local news, but not for the fact that Jeff had a very iconic photograph of Harambe. I would say that he's projecting a fearsome aura of sort of strength and calm and dignity. And as a result of that image and the story, it quickly became a meme. And, you know, Harambe's been all over the world.
Okay, you guys, we need to talk about Harambe, not just tweet about it.
A special vigil held for Harambe, who was nicknamed Handsome, a memorial for the animal now growing.
Right now online, there's a petition to change the name of Cincinnati to Harambe City. There's a petition to put a statue of him in the White House. There's a petition to make an actual Pokemon out of him.
You know, there are Harambe t-shirts, Harambe mugs. You can buy Harambe merchandise on Amazon.
Harambe this, Harambe that. Harambe, Harambe, Harambe.
And Jeff's photograph really was seen by untold eyeballs across the world.
But the problem for Jeff was that while his photo was being shared billions of times, he wasn't making much money from it. Now a new technology has changed that.
Here we go again, NFTs.
Now what the hell's an NFT? Apparently cryptocurrency.
Is that it's so-called NFT, and that stands for
non-fungible token, which acts like a digital certificate of authenticity.
NFTs are the newest flavor.
Whoa, stick with me. Let's just take a step back. What does this all mean? Well,
a very intriguing possibility has opened up for Jeff, which is the possible sale of the original file. So the photograph that was taken on Jeff's camera that he backed up to his computer, he now has the opportunity to upload that file and create an NFT, so a non-fungible token. And Jeff is hoping that a wealthy collector, perhaps a Harambe fan out there, will think that that is a worthwhile investment for them to purchase.
Jeff's photo is about to join an online market which has taken off in recent months as people flock to buy digital collectibles for, in some cases, millions of pounds. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, from memes to high art, inside the NFT gold rush. Alex Hearn, you are the UK technology editor for The Guardian. And on this podcast, we always turn to you when a sort of confusing new internet trend emerges and we proverbially get you out of the wardrobe and ask you to help us understand something. And this time it's NFTs. NFT stands for non-fungible token. What does that actually mean?
So, you know, firstly, let's talk about what a fungible token would be.
Fungibility is this idea in economics that any two items are completely and utterly substitutable. So a classic fungible item is money. You know, if I give you a pound and you give me a pound back, I don't care that I've got a different pound from you. It's all cash. And so fungible tokens are things like Bitcoin and Ethereum, these cryptocurrencies that sprang up in the last decade, which are at the very least currency-like. A Bitcoin is a Bitcoin is a Bitcoin. You don't care which Bitcoin you have. But if you want an asset that you can trade in a pure digital native fashion, but that represents, you know, something unique, what you want there is you want a token that's not fungible, or an NFT. An NFT is a digital asset that can be used to represent not currency, but anything that can be referred to digitally. So it can be an asset which reflects an artwork, an asset which reflects an item that appears in a video game. The positive way of putting it is that, you know, the limits are your imagination. The negative way of putting it is that there's not really anything to it other than it's an asset like Bitcoin that points to a thing.
So what is a good example of a non-fungible token, and how does it become worth something?
We can point to CryptoKitties.
Hey everyone, my name is Jordan. I'm one of the team members on CryptoKitties, a digital collectible cat game.
Today, as one of the earliest, the first that really gained a lot of attention and the first that was sold for real cash value. CryptoKitties are effectively digital Pokemon cards without the card game.
CryptoKitties is an awesome game where you could buy, sell, and breed digital collectible cats. These cats are super adorable.
They are small, cute-looking cat drawings that are algorithmically generated. So it's somewhere between a toy and a game.
This cat's name is Cutesy. I am in love with it. I love the color. I love the eyes. I love the mouth. So it's 0.002 Ethereum. I'm going to buy it because...
Where does the value come from? I don't know, but they're worth millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars?
Literally millions of dollars. And, you know, all we can really say is they're worth something because people are willing to pay that for it. For some people, it's just a belief that they'll be able to resell it for even more millions of dollars. It's pure speculation. For other people, I think if you're really into this whole market, like if you think cryptocurrencies are going to be world-changing, then I think you probably put a bit of value on just the idea of crypto native art. For other people, I think they like the quasi ownership of having a CryptoKitty. Like, there are definitely some people who see one of these
people
things
just like having a digital cat, Alex, and that's fine.
Exactly. People like having stuff. And for some people, that stuff doesn't even exist. It's just a non-fungible token and people like having that. And, you know, everyone has their kink. And for some people, it's CryptoKitties.
How did this all begin? Where did NFTs come from?
They kind of began as an idea. Some people noticing that the properties of Bitcoin meant that you could actually tweak a Bitcoin so that rather than being cash, it was unique. The first sort of major NFT, certainly the first one that is major today, was CryptoPunks, which was a sort of hybrid art project slash collectible trading card game, effectively. Some artist entrepreneurs generated 10,000 CryptoPunks, little pixel drawings of punky profiles of heads. There's 10,000 of them. There will only ever be 10,000 of them. And they can be bought, sold, and traded just like Ethereum or Bitcoin. These are not novel concepts. That's the same thing that's true for most stuff in the world. But for a digital asset, that is actually new. You know, before NFTs, if you saw a nice picture on the internet, there wasn't really a way of owning it beyond just downloading it. You could pay the artist for it, but you didn't have ownership of it. The artist could try and sort of say, if you want a high-res JPEG of it, email me and we can talk. But, you know, there was no such thing as owning that.
Okay, so you've talked about lots of interesting things like digital cats and digital heads, and I don't really understand a lot of this, but what I do get is that an NFT is not the meme or the image itself, but it's the certificate, essentially, that says someone owns it, and that's what gives it its value. I was wondering if we could create an NFT out of today in focus? Like, could I make an MP3 of you defining what an NFT is and sell it?
Absolutely.
Great.
With the provisos that, you know, all you'd really be selling is an NFT wrapper. But yeah, no, you could. Anything that can be described digitally can be NFTized.
Shirin, you've told us about Jeff and how he plans to make money out of his photo of Harambe by selling it as an NFT. And he's not the only one. You've been speaking to other people whose images or videos went viral many years ago, and they now realise they can sell them. What have you found?
What I found was really interesting about this is that the people who became memes in the really early days of the internet, so the 2000s and the early 2010s, none of these people chose to be memes. And most of them have made peace with the fact that they are memes. They're not upset or hurt by it. But what these people are now realizing is that there is actually a marketplace for those memes. People want to buy these things. They feel like they're early slices of internet history, and that in 100 years' time, people will look back at these memes and think, oh, that those were the first memes that we had, really. And maybe these are very precious items, they're artifacts almost, you know, like Fabergé eggs. which it sounds crazy, right? Like, we're both laughing, but lots of people do very seriously think this, and they do think that these items are valuable and worth preserving. And so people are willing to pay for them.
Okay, let's talk about how much these memes are selling for, starting with a video that went viral in 2007 called Charlie Bit My Finger, where a baby bites his brother's finger and hilarity ensues. How much did that sell for? And what are some of the other memes making big money right now?
So that sold for £538,000 in May.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot. Disaster Girl, a meme of a sort of very mischievous looking little girl, and she's looking at the camera over her shoulder, and then behind her, there's a building on fire. So it's a very funny image. And basically the implication is that this little angelic child has set the building on fire. So that meme has sold for £350,000 in April.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the meme Overly Attached Girlfriend, which is a photograph of a sort of really kind of deranged, possessive sort of girlfriend, wide eyes, you know, crazy energy. That sold for £289,000 in April.
And none of these people at the subject of these memes set out to make such huge amounts of money. I'm assuming they must be pretty happy about this.
I mean, honestly, they're stunned.
Yeah, and now you're making a ton of money. So, Charlie, what do you think about this? $760,000. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's crazy. We were all sat in the same room watching it live. And yeah, it was just crazy they got to such a high number.
They have the air of people who have just won the lottery. You know, people are talking about paying off all their college tuition debts in one go. So yeah, they're absolutely thrilled. And I think a little bit stunned that people are willing to pay quite so much for those NFTs.
Is it also about control? Because these are images that have gone all around the world. And, you know, in being able to sell it, it's to reclaim something that's yours.
I think what has been really quite empowering for these people is finally feeling like they have agency over those images. You know, I spoke to Zoe Roth, who is the Disaster Girl meme. She was a child when that photograph was taken. She was 4 years old. And she's had to live with the fact and the knowledge that she will always be Disaster Girl. You know, she has an alter ego.
Gosh.
She has a meme version of herself online. And anytime anybody ever doodles her name, that is what will come up. And so she described it to me as saying that she felt like she finally had a bit of agency over what was happening to her. You know, people have been making jokes using her image on the internet now for a decade, and she can't control that, but she can control who owns the NFT of her photograph.
Who is spending all this money on these memes, Shirin?
Well, so a lot of these collectors aren't particularly public, but I did manage to speak to one collector.
I'm 21, so waking up at 9 a.m. is sort of like the limits of my potential.
Well, thank Harry Jones. He is a 21-year-old cryptocurrency developer and an investor. And he's originally from Worthing, but he lives in New York and he has lived in the US since he was a child.
I moved to America when I was like 6 years old.
Okay.
So I have this like weird hybrid accent.
Yeah, you do.
So Harry owns the NFT versions of memes, including Bad Luck Brian, Success Kid, Ermengarde Girl, and Tips Fedora.
Do you like? Can you tell me how much you've spent so far on these kind of memes?
Probably $100,000.
Which is a lot of money, but he's very flush with cryptocurrency.
I'm a college dropout who's just kind of gotten really, some would say lucky. I'm trying to say this in the least arrogant way possible. I've just done quite well in crypto.
He works in the cryptocurrency space. And I guess what I should say is that, you know, the bigger picture that is really driving all of this is that crypto has been doing unbelievably well. And so a lot of people have made a lot of money, and Harry is one of them. And when I was speaking to him, I was saying, you know, how do you display these things that you buy? And he was like, oh, yeah, I just put them on like a television.
This Samsung Frame TV, which is just sort of like the TV that morphs into an art display.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just have a slideshow of everything I've got.
I love that.
But is it old-fashioned to think that things must be displayed, Sharon? Like, we're of the era of Pokemon cards, you know, the physical representation of your money. Are we kind of beyond that now?
That's a really good question. And I think actually that does kind of betray our age, because like some of the people that I've spoken to in this space, they point out that if you had a piece of art on the wall in your home, not that many people are going to be able to see that piece of art. Whereas if you purchase an NFT, potentially unlimited people can view that.
I mean, these are culturally significant things. Like people are only just wrapping their head around the fact that a meme is one of the most culturally significant things of my generation, at least. Like at its core, people buy NFTs as collectibles. Like crypto art, you own a valuable art piece. Crypto memes, you own a valuable collectible. It's a culturally significant thing.
Sharon, Alex has mentioned that basically anything on the internet can be an NFT. And these tokens are making waves in the art world as well, aren't they?
Yes. The art world has cartoon dollar signs in their eyes right now. I mean, they're just falling over themselves to get on the NFT train. Major auction houses like Christie's and Sotheby's are now selling NFT art. These are incredibly prestigious institutions. So in March this year, a work by the digital artist Beeple sold at Christie's for £48 million.
$69 million.
Oh my gosh.
That's the third highest price ever achieved by a living artist.
And is this an artist who was commercially successful before?
Moderately, but he's no Lucian Freud. His real name is Mike Winkleman.
As of 6 months ago,
what?
Beeple had yet to sell any work.
No, I mean, this is unbelievable. Like, and I would say actually that people that I've spoken to in the art world admit that price was overinflated. People were just so excited by the prospect of the first NFT sale. And most people now say the market has slightly calmed down since then.
Alex, Sharon has talked about how, for the first time, artists are able to make money from work that before perhaps didn't have the same value. Is this why NFTs exist? To allow people like Jeff with his Harambe picture to make money in a way he couldn't before?
I think it would be nice if that were why. Perhaps a more accurate way of putting it is they exist because people worked out how to build them. That said, turning something that has no easy way to become a monetizable source of income into a genuine source of a living for digital artists is really important. And for me, the most valuable part of NFTs.
What is stopping someone laying claim to an image and then making money by selling it as an NFT when it's not actually theirs in the first place?
I mean, one answer to that is nothing. For most digital artists who arrive on the scene now, there's not really anything to prevent that sort of fraud except the same stuff that we have offline. A lot of people I speak to about this sector really want to think that the reason why it all seems weird and silly to them is because they don't understand something about it. But actually, it is exactly as simple as it looks. It's nothing to do with authenticity of artworks. It's nothing to do with novel ways of transmitting content. It's nothing to do with copyright reform. It's just very simply a token that can be distinguished from other similar tokens. That's all it is.
Am I just trying to impose my traditional views of what commerce is onto this world of NFTs, Alex, and it doesn't really apply?
I'd say the opposite, really. I'd say your traditional views of what commerce is work very well here. It's just online now.
It's just online. It's just digital. I just keep thinking about when there was that phase for buying people's stars and you'd get a certificate that said you owned a star when, of course, you didn't. And even if you did, I mean, it's already dead.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. You know, again, the negative way to look at it is just that this delusion is now shared by more people. Great. The positive way of looking at it is that it does feel different to have a civilization-wide shared belief that you're buying stars than a belief that's just one salesman saying, why not buy a star? I can sell you two for $5, three for $7. You want Beetlejuice? It's yours.
I'll take it. Coming up, the future of NFTs. And Jeff finally cashes in. So on the one hand, then, NFTs are providing amazing opportunities to artists, creators, and allowing people to invest in digital cats, which is great. But on the other hand, because it works like Bitcoin, where a record of it is stored in a shared ledger called the blockchain, it uses up a huge amount of server power across the globe and is pretty bad for the environment. And then there's the issue of people jumping into these investments of things that might not really be worth anything. But ultimately, Alex, how long do you think this craze for NFTs can last?
I can say we are past the first peak. Sales are not reaching the levels that they were, and people who have bought grossly overinflated mediocre NFT art are finding that no one wants to buy it from them. I don't think we'll get another huge bubble in this sector for a while. The thing I'm keeping an eye on as a bellwether for this whole thing. Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, is selling an NFT representing the source code of the web. It is a hugely important historical artifact, and it is something that could only be sold as an NFT. I think it will probably sell for millions of dollars. The question for me is kind of, does it sell for more or less than Beeple's artwork? If it sells for more, I think there's still a lot of runway for this trend. If it doesn't, then I think that's proof that the huge boosters of the sector have stopped plowing money into it. And that, for me, is the beginning of a real burst.
Sharon, we began this episode by talking about a gorilla, Harambe, and Jeff McCurry, who took that very famous photo of him. Jeff has now sold that as an NFT. What happened?
You know, it was a bit touch and go for a while, actually. I thought Harambe would fly off the shelves, but no one bought him for about a week, so you know, it was a bit nerve-wracking. But eventually Harambe did sell. He went for £57,000 on June 3rd.
It's just crazy. I don't know what else to say, that all of a sudden, after 5 years, all of a sudden strangers are saying, yeah, we're gonna pay you money for what you did 5 years ago. Oh, thanks.
Jeff was very, very happy about it. He was in very ebullient spirits when I gave him a phone call to congratulate him, and he was planning to move to Hawaii.
I didn't get enough to, you know, move to Hawaii and be over there or anything, but no, I got enough to clear up all my things here and have enough to buy a nice condo over there. So yeah, I'm set.
He's very happy and delighted, and he feels that Harambe, most importantly, would actually want him to be happy and would feel really, really pleased that Jeff has managed to make some money from his image.
Oh, he would just be so happy. Yeah, I have no problem believing that Harambe would be thrilled that I'm enjoying this success.
Yeah.
He was a good... I wanted him to succeed, and he wanted me to succeed, I have no doubt.
I think Jeff feels like this is sort of, you know, recompense for all of the times that people stole his image without his permission. He's going to move to Hawaii, get his condo, and sort of think about that big guy up in heaven looking down at him, and this is all good now.
Sharon, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Shirin Kali. Read her article about the people selling their memes at theguardian.com, where you can also find Alex's interview with Tim Berners-Lee, in which he defends his decision to sell the web source code as an NFT. I'd also recommend going back and listening to an episode we made with Alex in January, which helped me understand Bitcoin and explains more about the blockchain and how digital currencies work. It's called Is Bitcoin a Scam? And you can find it on the website. And another podcast I would highly recommend listening to is Comfort Eating, a new series from The Guardian presented by our own restaurant critic, Grace Dent. Each week, Grace is joined by a famous guest who shares with her their favourite comfort foods and some personal stories. Last week's episode with the screenwriter Russell T Davies was really lovely. And this week, she's speaking to the very funny Nish Kumar. Go and find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Alex Atack and Ned Carter-Miles. Sound design was by Sami Elanani. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. We'll be back tomorrow.